So you all have listened to the entire Your Wish Is Your Command CD program and how anyone can make millions, the money-making secrets they don't want you to know about. Any questions, comments, or observations about anything in the CDs for clarification?
The four levels of learning, how do you know when you're hitting each of these steps? It's pretty clear once you hit the last step, but the second and third step, there wasn't a lot of detail. Like, when do you know you're, like, kind of going up that ladder, if you will?
Good question. The question was the four steps of learning any new information. How do you know when you're in each step as opposed to the last step? Everybody, before you learn anything, you're at step one. You're unconsciously incompetent. That's when you don't know what you don't know. So when you start to learn anything, you're going to learn a foreign language, you're going to learn Chinese. So you're automatically, at the starting point of learning anything, you don't know what you don't know. So you're unconsciously incompetent. When you start learning something and you become aware for the first time that you don't know it, when you become aware that, oh my gosh, I was doing it all wrong, or oh my gosh, I really didn't know all this information, or I thought I knew, but now I realize I didn't know. When you come to that cognition, which usually happens pretty instantaneously, you get to level two. You're now consciously incompetent. So unconscious incompetence is not knowing that you don't know. Conscious incompetence is when it's really the first step in the teachability index. It's becoming teachable because you're consciously aware of your, quote, incompetence. And incompetence is a bad word. It's just you're consciously aware that you don't know. So when you consciously are aware that you don't know something, that's when the teachability index kicks in. You should become very teachable at that point. Now, the third step, conscious competence, that's when you know how to do the thing or know the information, but you must consciously think about applying it to make it work. For example, you know how to, you just learned how to bowl. But now you're thinking through, okay, I have to step one, two, three. You're thinking through the entire process. So when you have to consciously activate your thoughts to apply what you've learned, when you have to consciously do it, you just got directions to a new location. And you know the directions, but you're thinking, wait a minute, it's the third exit. Okay, now I have to take, let's see, which way, it's the second left. You're consciously thinking through the process. You're in conscious competence. Unconscious competence is easy. That's when you drive there and when you get home and you go, I don't even remember driving here because you just did it automatically. Or you just bowl or you just tie your shoelace without doing any thinking. That answer the question? Good. Any other questions?
People that are weren't in a society and didn't have mentors like a Bill Gates, maybe even a Steve Jobs, those kind of people, if they weren't brought up in societies, how did they get the sort of knowledge and mastery that led them to
achieve levels of success?
Yeah.
So if a person was not in a society and had direct access to this information and mentoring and learning from people, how did they achieve levels of success? And you mentioned Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, with the assumption that they're not members of societies, which you can't assume.
Sure.
That's number one. You can't assume that. Actually, if you look at the Forbes 400 list, every single person in there is a member of one or more or multiple secret societies. And again, most of these people do not deny it, and they do not keep it a secret of their membership. That's really important. I mean, you know, they are members of groups. And let me define what these societies are. A very common one is the YPO, Young Presidents Organization. These are groups that people get together and they share information amongst like-minded people who they believe are worthy, for a lot of different reasons, of learning this information. And societies, whether it's Skull and Bones at Yale University, again, a very well-known one, whether it's the Freemasons or whether it's some of the lesser-known ones, or whether it's groups that you may not even consider as being, quote, societies, which include several country club memberships and different memberships in various cities around the world, where, you know, they look like they're just a country club membership or just a business association membership. And in fact, when you get in, that's what it appears to be. And after a period of time, then it changes. All of a sudden you learn that this group is a little bit more than this. You come in and that's what it is, but then there's a little bit more. And that's, for example, what Bill Gates and Steven Jobs got exposed to later on. So what happens is, in these groups, what the benefits are, and there are multiple, but the two major benefits is, number one, you're gaining information and knowledge so that you don't have to figure it out on your own or guess or wonder if it works. So you're being told, look, this is the way it works. And when you're told from somebody that you respect and admire and who has the evidence of it working, telling you directly, look, trust me, this is how it works. This is what we all do. This is how it works. Your level of acceptance and belief goes up dramatically, and you can start applying it. So first thing is getting knowledge and information and having access to people that can help fine-tune you and make sure you keep on track. So it's getting information. The second big advantage of these groups is the associations. When you are a member, Harvard University, the professors at Harvard University and the people that go to Harvard University, I've talked to them. I say, what is the advantage of a Harvard University education? Are you really learning more? Are you really getting a better education? Are you really getting more information that's going to help you get a better job and make more money and so forth? What's the huge advantage of getting a Harvard University education? And the answer is, it's the people you meet. It's not the education you get from the professors. It's the fact that your bunkmate's Al Gore, or I mean, it's like, oh yeah, I'm hanging out with these guys whose parents are the titans of industry, and so these are my friends. So when I leave, I pick up the phone, I call my friend whose dad owns blah 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 blah, and you want to make a deal, and guess what happens? The deal gets done in seconds. Think about the average guy trying to make a deal. Okay, yeah, I mean, we're negotiating now with different things, right? So you're on the phone, okay, and you have to go through this middle manager and that middle manager, and you can convince them that you're a good guy and your deal is good, and you have to set up a meeting and then give a PowerPoint presentation and do this and do that, and you're trying to make a deal with a company or do some business with somebody else. And it takes sometimes forever, and they have to go through committees, and everybody's nervous. Well, guess what happens? In the real world, at the highest levels, Joe picks up the phone and calls his friend Sam, who he went to school with, or is a member of the country club, or a member of the YPO, and you follow me there. And because they are in the same group, they can pick up a phone and they get the call. Even if they don't know the guy, they can pick up the phone and they get through on the first call. And the person will listen to what the offer is and bypass all the BS, and then the deals just get done. Because it's like, oh, okay, well, you're in. And you think it's a good deal? Sure, I'll do it for you. And why? Because someday that guy may need to call him. And so it's, you've heard, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.